Hello, I'm Joan. I'm a Canadian family physician who also works as a restorative medical educator, facilitator, and coach. I create spaces that rehumanize the work of healthcare. I'm creating this podcast to remind myself, as well as anyone else working in a helping profession, that when you are working and caring for your human patients, you are the other human in the room. Hey there, healthcare humans. Before we dive into this week's episode, I wanted to give you a quick reminder that Creating Space, my new coaching program and retreat, is going to be starting October 7th, 2024. So if you have been listening to the podcast for a while and really already making some changes in your life that help you rehumanize healthcare, and you're ready for the next step, you're ready to be a part of a community of healthcare humans who are asking these same innovative, system-changing questions of what happens if I find a way for my version of healthcare to be human for me. How does that change the system as a whole? How can it feel better for my own life? And you want to spend most Monday afternoons with me for the next 6 months, as well as a fabulous 3-night retreat in April where we sink in even deeper and get to be in real-time community with each other. I would love for you to join me. There's a really amazing group of healthcare humans who have already signed up, but there is space for you. We're waiting for you. So what are you waiting for? So in this podcast, the show notes below, you'll be able to find the link, or you can just go to joanchanmd.com/space, book your call with me. We can make sure it's the right time for you, good fit for you. And let's get going. We're waiting for you to join us in Creating Space. And I'm so excited for you to book your call and see you there. Now on with the episode. Hey there, healthcare humans. Thank you so much for coming back for another episode of The Other Human in the Room. So it's a solo episode today. You'll see I've got quite a few interview episodes that have been and are coming up. I'm really enjoying talking to other people and not just talking by myself. But I also know a lot of you really like these episodes where I'm just giving a little nugget of wisdom that I've been learning and thinking about. And so here you go. You get a solo episode today. Today's topic is something that I have been thinking about a lot. The way I want to frame it, and like the title of the episode, as you probably already saw, is how are you spending your attention budget? It's a question that I've been really inviting myself to ask, and I've found it an interesting way to consider the whole topic of what we focus on, what we pay attention to. In some ways, it's connected to, you know, the capacity work of like not overscheduling your life, etc. But even down to the level of literally what your brain is trained to focus and see, you know. The idea of this episode came from a podcast recommendation that was shared with me by a lovely colleague that was all about like sort of the science of attention and the science of how our attention works well, and situations in which our attention gets fragmented, and how that leads to things like stress and burnout. Examples being, you know, the more time you're spending trying to multitask, and you know, you're doing a task and you're trying to focus on it, but then you're also checking your phone and you're also talking to someone, a colleague or whatever, that this thing we call multitasking is a myth. Really, that's task switching. So it's switching where you're sort of, if you imagine your attention as sort of a spotlight. So it's like, if you focus your spotlight on one thing and then you're swinging it around and focusing it on a different thing, that every time you do that, that drains your energy a bit. In fact, an analogy I really liked that they used in that episode was the analogy of like a whiteboard. So if you think about it, not even just being a spotlight, but like when you focus on a certain thing, then the whiteboard in your brain populates like all the data about what's coming in about that thing and all of the context that you know from the past and estimations of what you think about the future about that thing. So like a bunch, like a whole file opens up in your mind, right? And then if you very quickly try and switch to something else, even if you think it's just for a second, your brain has to like erase that whiteboard and then populate a whole new thing. That takes energy. And, you know, just like how on a whiteboard, like if you write on it a lot, like you start to see the residual of the old things coming through. I'm sure I'm not the only one where you're trying to focus on a task, but your attention is being split and drawn. You're distracted and you're holding on to an event from the past, or you're holding on to a worry about the future. And that means that you don't just have the one spotlight on. Your attention is being sort of fragmented and trying to spread in multiple directions. And that can be so taxing. That can really lead to, you know, extra mental exhaustion. A lot of us have to deal with like this mental load thing where we're trying to juggle multiple things at the same time. And I mean, basically the bottom line is that our brain works better when we focus on one thing at a time. And that was sort of affirming to hear, because that's something I had heard before and something that I try and practice by as much as I can. And then another thing that was interesting from that podcast, it is an Ezra Klein podcast, by the way. If I find it, I'll link it in the show notes if you want to listen to like the whole thing and the scholar that was talking about attention there. But a very unshocking study that she quotes is that when people, there was a one study that was, I think, just like some other industry, and they cut half of the people in the study, like the study group versus the control group, they cut the study group off from access to their email for 2 weeks. And shockingly, they were way more productive and way less stressed versus the group that did have access to their email the whole time. And then another study, which I think many of us have heard versions of the study cited within healthcare, but like that there is a direct correlation between the amount of time you spend looking at your email and other inboxes in the computer in healthcare and the amount of like stress and burnout you feel. So the more time you're spending looking at a computer screen instead of at a human, for most of us, we do not find that as enjoyable. That's not why we signed up for it. And we get more stressed. So that got me thinking about this idea of attention budget, right? Because if we are not thoughtful, our attention is grabbed and sort of taken from us in many ways. And we could be quite haphazard and scattered about how our attention is doled out through the day, you know? And I say this knowing like there are folks that listen that may have like neurodiversity where they're sort of baseline ability to focus on one thing is different than someone who doesn't have, does everyone have some amount of neurodiversity? I'm not sure, but say someone who meets criteria for ADHD, for example, like, right? That's a whole thing, like challenges with focusing and attention. And the interesting thing is like the tips and the strategies that have helped me the most have been actually from those who have like really like clinical challenges with their attention and therefore need to structure their lives understanding like, I'm not even going to try and multitask. That's going to be terrible for me, right? So I say this in a way that includes everyone, knowing everyone's ability to do it, say without medication or coaching or whatever may vary. But I think the principles and the question I'm going to offer you could be helpful for anyone, whether you view yourself as someone who has like attention deficit stuff or not, right? And it's just this notion of like, imagine that you have like a certain amount of attention to dole out each day. Like you have a budget, like pretend it's like your attention is money and you have a certain amount to spend every day. How are you paying it out? First of all, just to see, is it the kind of things that you're like enjoying and liking, or is it how you want to spend your attention just sort of globally? But even more specifically, speaking of it as like a money analogy, what is the return on investment for each of the targets of your attention? If you really can kind of reflect on, okay, if I'm paying a lot of attention to this one thing, and what is the impact that's having on my life? What is the return on my investment of giving this target so many of my attention dollars? And do I like that or not? So it's not about it being good or bad or healthy or unhealthy or any of those things. Because if you've listened to me for more than one episode, you know I'm like not into that kind of languaging. It's more about like reflecting on the impact of what you pay attention to in your own life. And if that's something you want to continue or not, knowing that actually could flow over time. There could be times where it's like, yes, right now my focus and my attention's on this. And I like the return of an investment. And I know that means that I'm not getting other kinds of return on investment by focusing on other things. And that feels good for me. And then in a different season, it shifts. That's fine. That's great. But it's about inviting you to be thoughtful and intentional and reflective about what you are paying attention to. as well as talking like kind of specifically about strategies of how to help support yourself with that, right? So I wanted to use four different examples to kind of just talk about ways that I've applied this concept to my life, even before, like I just thought of the attention budget thing, but I've been doing versions of supporting my brain to focus more completely on one thing at a time for some time. And so the first example that I wanted to give, which is an ongoing flow, is how much attention I pay to the internet. And I don't mean the internet like my work internet. I mean the internet like free time internet, whether it's on my computer, though the vast majority of the time I'm spending that's non-work related via the internet is on my phone. The vast majority is through all the different apps, especially the social media apps, right? And I've done some amount of like reading and listening, and so, and listen to some podcasts that are about how, especially social media, like sites like Instagram and TikTok and Facebook and all of, and Twitter and all of, or X or whatever it's called, like not only are they a place, just like a potential option, like one of the things on the menu that you could potentially pay attention to, but the way they are designed is explicitly to exploit your brain's natural tendency to pay attention. That it's making sure as much as possible that you want to keep paying attention, because like the more you stay on those apps, the more you pay attention on those apps, then the more likely it is that you're going to give money to these apps, like through buying things with ads and like all the different ways that those apps make money. Like they make money through the amount of time our eyeballs spend on it. Same with YouTube. Like the amount of time you spend on those sites, just like television used to be, like you see more ads, that has increases their impact. Like that's how they make money. This isn't like shocking or new, but it's been fascinating. Like there's this podcast called Your Undivided Attention, which is about social media. And they were comparing like the designs of the algorithms with things like slot machines, and how they are very similar, where, you know, you're scrolling through your timeline, and then you're randomly getting these like hit rewards of interesting things, or hit rewards of anxiety provoking things, or fear or anger provoking things, things that then your body says, oh my gosh, we have to pay attention to this for our survival. Or in the case of like happy things, funny things, silly things, oh my gosh, we should pay attention to this. This is so like rich and rewarding and help and feels good in my body. So I want more of it and more of it, right? It's like, I know some people call it addictive. I'm never sure if that's a helpful word or not, because it's so layered with like sort of stigma and shame, though it shouldn't be, you know? And so I kind of avoid it for myself, because I find if I'm like, I'm addicted to social media, then I feel more helpless to it, sadly. So like, I don't think of it that way, but I do notice like social media, gosh, I can really fall down that rabbit hole. Something I learned about, you know, social media and a way to view social media that I also find helpful for myself, same with like screens in general, just like watching something. I learned from my like embodied parenting course that I took, where they're talking about screens for kids and how it's almost like when you are watching that screen, it's not that it's good or bad, but your body is still, and then your mind and your imagination and your brain is like completely engaged and immersed in another world. And so then when you try and stop the screens, like say for little kids, it's not shocking that they kind of freak out, because their body has been like, we haven't been moving. And yet I feel like I've been on another planet. I feel like I've gone on an adventure, and like getting confused by that. I think of it like teleporting. I find that to be a very useful analogy, where like, if I'm in a bored moment and I'm like, I want to look at my phone, the question I started asking myself is like, do I want to simulate teleporting to a different realm? And especially with social media, an unknown realm, I'm not sure where I'm going to end up teleporting when I open the app. Do I want to do that now? Is there space for me to do that and come back and then settle back into my body here? Or is it like between patients? And so then I'll be like half thinking about another world and like half feeling like I'm in another world while I'm trying to see a patient. And like that helps me as like a way to consider when to check my phone, and even like what to check my phone. I read books on my phone. And so that's like and I've always loved books, and that you can feel that sense of like, I feel like I'm in that story. I feel like I'm in that world. And so saying, oh, is this a moment where I want to get teleported to the world of Dragon Rider School? I'm reading these books about dragon riders. It's very compelling. It can hold my attention, you know? And so again, like, it's not about good or bad. It's not about like, is this right or wrong? Do I have to abstain or whatever? Like, it's simply about like noticing the impact it has on me. And I would say things like social media and even books, like things where it's meant to immerse you, that changes your attention. Like, you were focused on something else before, and now you're focused on this. And what is the return of investment on all these different targets of attention? So even within like social media, I started to really check in on myself and the impact. How did I feel when I was doing, you know, teleporting in Facebook, and like what Facebook brought up for me? And I was honestly like, Facebook, I was noticing how I just almost immediately, almost always felt like ill and like kind of nauseated and like yucky, because it's a lot of text-based like arguments. And especially if I was looking for something relaxing, I'm like, now I'm stressed. Everyone hates each other. And so I have chosen to pay less of my attention dollars to that, unless I'm really in a thoughtful space of like, you know what? I am interested. Like, I picture like I'm about to enter one of those like old-timey, like, I guess it's not old timey. They exist in parts of the world, like marketplace where everyone's yammering about things, or like, you know, like, is it Roman, where they used to have those forums where people are all like debating with each other? I'm like, I'm about to enter that. Am I in the headspace where that's where I want to enter? And in like, in a way that feels good for me, in a way where I'm like practicing curiosity, or I'm like, you know, doing exposure therapy to conflict, like, okay. But if I'm doing it because I'm bored and stressed and want to like relax, like, will I get some happy stimulation as a return on my investment of opening Facebook? I've learned the answer is no. So I avoid that if that's the thing if I'm hoping for relaxation as a return on investment for focusing my attention on something. I've learned actually in general, social media, not so good for that. Instagram in short bursts, and only because I'm curating my timeline, and even then things pop in. And so like, you know, okay, what's actually a more steady return on my investment? So specifically that example, if the end of the day, I do want to kind of like transport to another realm, because I think it's really delightful to do so, I'm more prone to reading my dragon book right now, and like reading in general, because it's like a stable, single new world I'm immersing myself in, that I do find easier to switch in and out of, because it's just the one, and the words can be captivating, but it's not using as much stimuli to keep my attention there as it would if it's like videos. And especially videos is a part of an algorithm where it's like, watch this next, read this next, right? Like, it's much more steady state, and that feels better for my body. And I have sort of space and time to like enjoy it. Like, what if we wanted the return of investment of the things we're focusing on to be joy, pleasure, connection, relaxation, peace, ease? Like, what is it that you want from the things you're paying attention to? And have you noticed that when you pay attention to certain things, it's very rare that you get it? And so especially things where it's optional. Well, I guess everything's optional. I shouldn't say that. But especially things where it's like, this isn't about a role I've signed up for. Like, I've signed up to be a doctor. And so I'm going to talk next about like how you can pay attention in those settings to still get those ROI. But in these cases of things that are, you know, extracurricular, that are what you're doing in your downtime, really focusing on, are they giving me what I want? I know like the doom scroll is like a thing, and the revenge procrastination is a thing. And it's because like, and we just, it's sort of a joke, and we're like, haha, we're doing it. And that's fine. Like, it's not, I'm not saying you're bad if you're doing it. I do it too. And like, just notice, what are you getting back from the attention you're paying? Right. And if you don't like what you're getting back, and knowing that, especially these apps, like, they are designed for you to still crave them, even if you don't like the result. Like, for me, I'm always deleting my apps. And then I'll like say, okay, now I have my certain time. I'm going to go in Instagram to like interact with people, to share things to my stories. I still enjoy my little corner of the internet that I've created on Instagram. So I like to sort of populate it with fun things for people to have a more easeful time with when they're, you know, when they're looking at my page. But I do that like intentionally, and not when I'm stressed and need to relax. I do it when it's sort of like, I do it more as an outward project, and when a time where I'm more resourced, and then I delete the apps again. I'm not perfect. You know, like just this morning, the day I'm recording this, like it was a U.S. presidential debate last night. And there were many recaps I could have watched. Taylor Swift endorsed Kamala Harris. And so there's many things going on about that. And like before I sat down to record this, I was sort of glad I had this because like absolutely I get sucked down rabbit holes for sure. I forget about this concept and I could have sat there for a few hours and watched different things, but I was already noticing like the tension, even the like the highs of the happiness there, it was like mixed in with tension and everyone talking. And I'm just like, I'm not enjoying the return of investment of me consuming this much, especially like it's sort of like intuitive eating. If you've heard of that, like you can enjoy the first few bites of something, but then if you're just gobbling it all down and not paying attention, the same thing that was bringing you a lot of like joy and pleasure, you've eaten so much of it that you're like over full. Now you feel sick. Now you feel yucky. And I was noticing I reached that point pretty quickly when like looking at political stuff online. So I was glad I had this podcast to be like, right, you are literally about to record a podcast about how you spend your attention dollars. I think I've spent enough attention dollars on this particular topic for now. Thank you so much. And when my brain gets like, oh, but like, what if there's another interesting hit of excitement or difference or shock? Like I can say to my brain, like, I hear you. I know you want that. And like, that's not what we're doing right now. You know, delete the apps. Focus on something else. That's a practice and it's well worth cultivating that practice. That's like, there's a reason it feels hard. And maybe for you, it's partially like say neurodiversity or something like that. It's also absolutely because all of these apps and news outlets and places like want you to pay attention. So they're exploiting those things in you and making you feel like you're going to fear of missing out and all those concepts. So it's fine if it feels hard. And the main thing I'll say is that it's worth it. It's worth it to like really intentionally pay attention to things that actually give you what you were hoping to get out of the experience, you know? So that's like kind of leisure attention, you could say, like relaxation, leisure, pleasure attention, and some ways that I focus on that. Now, absolutely, we can apply the same concept to our working life and our work with other humans. Like the place that I've done a lot of this work and have seen huge benefits and, you know, pays dividends, if you will, to use the like financial analogy ongoing, is with patients. Like, again, if you've listened to more than one of these episodes, especially a lot of my very earliest episodes were about specifically like different inhuman stories that could draw your attention away from the actual other human in the room. Like you're one of the humans in the room and we have to remember that. So actually I say actual, but like for the two humans in the room, oftentimes when it's us and the patient, we are not paying into ourselves and attention to ourselves and remembering that we are the other human in the room. But we, even if we think we're paying attention to the patient, oftentimes our attention is fragmented and fractured so much that it's hard to actually pay attention to that other human that is the patient in the room with us because of all the inhuman stories that we've been conditioned and socialized to believe about how this interaction is supposed to go, about how we are supposed to act and how they are supposed to act. And like we can barely actually think of the patient themselves, you know? And I mean, there's, you know, could say like, do you even know the colors of the eyes of your patients? But like, do you want to pay attention to that? But just to, beyond that, which is maybe less necessary, what is it that you notice that your brain wants to focus on? What is it that both our socialization and even like maybe perhaps unintentionally, like our medical training trains us to focus on in the room? And which of those pay dividends and which of those don't? So it's not that you're totally focusing on all the wrong quote unquote things, but it's about thinking through what is the return on investment on those things. So like paying attention to the patient's history, how the patient is sitting, how the patient is moving, the physical exam, like the hints about what basically paying attention to the person's story about their body and the body themselves, those do pay great dividends. Those ideally, that is what we've been trained to focus on in the room is sort of like, oh yes, like, oh, they're saying they've had the pain for this long and in this location. And we're forming our little hypotheses in the back of our minds of what could be going on here. You're like, that's so interesting. That makes a sense to pay attention to. Things that I have personally found do not pay good dividends to pay attention to, that I sort of accidentally got socialized or intentionally or whatever, like fear that I'm going to say something stupid, or fear that I'm going to make a mistake, or fear that this patient is mad at me, and really focusing on that. A huge one that many of us, and still me sometimes, can really get sucked into is I'm late. I have to, this is taking too long. And like, especially if like right from the get-go, as soon as you walk in your room, like, I'm already so behind, I have to catch up. And then have you had that where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so behind. Oh my gosh, this person keeps talking. Oh my gosh. And you realize like you've barely, or maybe have not actually heard what they've said because you're so spaced out thinking, oh my gosh, this, I'm so behind. Or like they ask you a question, you don't know the answer. And then you're in your head just being like, oh my gosh, I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. And you like stop thinking or critically or having curiosity for what the answer could be. Like you just sort of go blank, right? Like those are those inhuman stories that it's not evil. If you have them, you're not doing it to yourself. We've been conditioned and trained to have them, unfortunately. And it is very useful to practice releasing them. And that, you know, many like medical legal fear, that's a huge one. Imposter syndrome, a huge one. Go back to listen to previous episodes if you want some nuggets about each of those specific stories. Because the thing is, they are absolutely acting as like mesh or like frosted glass. Byron Katie, who you've heard me talk about even recently, she talks about these stories, these thoughts that end up blocking us from seeing the other person as post-it notes, as if like post-it notes are covering up the person with all of these stories about how they should be instead, about how I should be instead, about what's wrong about the situation, in ways that don't actually get to connection with the patient and even connection with what may be happening to the patient, right? Like, I'm just thinking of I'm running behind. So I go in the room and I'm really living in and paying attention to the story of like, I'm late. I have to catch up. And then the patient starts chatting and starts whatever. And then they start explaining all of their history in a very roundabout way. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, this person's taking forever. I'm never getting out of this room. I'm feeling trapped. But then all of this means I'm not actually listening. Versus if I, you know, say I know that I want to spend a certain amount of time in there, if possible, I have a goal and intention, I could like set that. And as always, remember that the best return on investment in terms of like efficient, timely, concentrated connection, like that is what's going to get me out of the room fastest. Is if I'm like, can I just pause you for a minute? This sounds really important. And I want to make sure that I've heard what you've said so far. Or like, actually, before we dive into the details, I actually like to rewind a bit and just check with you. Before you get into the details, is there, as a bottom line, what are you worried might be happening? Like kind of do some Fife questions. Have I done a podcast about Fife questions? I don't think so. I got to do a whole podcast about Fife questions. Anyway, but like I can do some of that really effective time, effective, like, agenda setting up front and take the time to do that. If I'm intentional about like, this is what I want to pay attention to, what the patient's actually here for, this is what I want to pay attention to, how the patient's actually feeling about it, and making sure that's being heard and listened to. Not because it makes me a good doctor or whatever, though I do think it makes me a good doctor, like, but even just like to help serve, if the goal is to be as efficient with our time as possible and effective with our time as possible, like let's focus in on those things, you know. And that, you know, the things that stop me from doing that is like, I'm too scared the patient will think I'm rude. I'm too scared that the patient will think I'm upset. Those are the inhuman stories that tragically make it more likely that the patient won't be heard. Maybe they will actually think I'm rude because I haven't heard them. Maybe they will be upset because they're like, gosh, the person, like that doctor was eyes glazed the whole time and you know, clearly hadn't heard me because they said it was the left side of my body when I made it clear it was the right or whatever, right? So peeling away all those post-it notes, peeling away all those inhuman stories, and really asking yourself, what do I want to focus on? This person, sure. And even like, what about this person? What do I want to pay attention to? Because I know it gives me good return on investment. And I'll say, like, first of all, I do find I'm more able to get effectively to the root of it and not have the like, okay, we're about to leave. Wait, we've totally missed half the story. I mean, that can still happen for sure. But like the more I'm focused and intentional up front about like, tell me every reason you want me to want to be here. Let's really understand the whole context that's brought you here. That really helps. And also without the post-it notes, even like if the patient won't help me set the agenda because they're so scattered and whatever, watching them without the story of who they're supposed to be or who I'm supposed to be, you know, certain patients, you know, they're just chatty Cathys or they're very vague or whatever. And if I have a story that they shouldn't be that way or that because they're that way, it's ruining my day, heart sink patients, whatever, the more I've peeled away the layers and really just seen them for who they are and accepted the reality that they are who they are, they're amazing. I'm able to be like, wow, look at this human. Look at how resilient they are. They went all those places, or, you know, they've lived this long with those symptoms. Wow. They're hilarious. They're wild and wonderful and textured and like all these fascinating. They're so fascinating. Like, humans are incredible. I'm not saying that they aren't also challenging, but like, that's part of it. Like, when you look at your patients, are you looking them through the lens of how they're making your day harder? Are you looking through the lens of like who they are and even like how you can offer help? And if you focus on that, then no matter what happens next, like it changes your experience, right? This is like, there's that principle from Emergent Strategy, Adrienne Marie Brown, one of my faves. She talks about what you pay attention to grows. So not only is it like the return of investment, like if, so when I pay attention to this fabulous human, accept them for who they are, listen to why they're here, we're able to have my return on that investment is often time efficiency, honestly, often getting to more likely to get to the root of what's really going on here, at least in their understanding, which then helps me have an understanding of my hypothesis of what is going on. Even if we like disagree on the surface, they're like, aliens have invested my brain. And then I'm like, I think they're psychotic. I mean, that one's sort of obvious, but you know, like I can get my understanding and working hypothesis of what's happening in their body and their life, you know, like there's that part, but like also I get the return on investment of like connection and pleasure and like enjoying my job and my life. And that means that's what grows. So then I'm relaxed. I'm smiling. I have loving energy to offer back out to them. And you know, what you give out, if you give out short, frustrated anger, you know, and I've been there too. It's not shocking though, that's usually what bounces back to you, right? When people are stressed, et cetera. So if we can be the ones that are like, in a place where what we look for in that person is like, what is interesting about them? What is amazing about them? Even if that's tricky, finding your way through your inhuman stories, underneath each of the humans you see has something really interesting about them. Maybe loving them feels too something, but like interesting, fascinating, being like an anthropologist, like you're like, wow, we are the same species. That's wild. Just like being fascinated that way. The energy you give comes back to you. And it means at the end of the day, you know, my husband asked me like, how was your day at work? And I'm like, it was amazing. Like there were parts that were really hard. Oh, there's parts that were really tricky. There were parts that like I really lost it or whatever. And like I saw so many fascinating people. I got to see like some of my heart seeing patients have become some of my favorite patients because of the affection I've developed for who they are. And by the way, what that's meant about holding more affection for all the things that I am, because often what we're judging in other people are the things we're judging in ourselves. That's a story for another day, but the spoiler alert, that's for sure happening. And so like it shifts your whole experience of patients. It really does. And by the way, the same principle you can apply to any human, and some will be harder to apply it to than others. Like certain members of my family, I am still sorting through and lovingly unraveling the inhuman stories that make it really hard for me to see them as simply another human rather than all the things I think they should be to me. And that's okay. I don't have to judge myself for having them still there. I understand why they're there. They're protective stories. They think they're protective anyway. They think they keep me safe, and that's all right. But like, as I am able to peel back more of those layers, a great example is my husband. Like the layers I've peeled back of him to really see him for who he is, like the quality of our relationship is incredible once I release the story that he's supposed to be anything other than he is, you know, colleagues for sure, an ongoing process, but like the more I see them and love them and accept them for who they are, like, this is where it like overlaps with the Accepting Reality podcast I talked a couple weeks ago. But like, look at that fascinating person being that person and paying attention to that. It changes. That's what grows, both in the way that like it changes my experience of them without them having to change. But over time, I notice, say I approach one of my colleagues in a defensive stance, always thinking they're about to snap at me. The snapping happens if I approach them from a place of being like, oh, like they're a wonderful human being. They're, you know, they're a colleague. They're someone I have a source of love from. The snaps, when the snaps come, don't feel as spicy. But also, like, I'm approaching in a friendly way. Shocking that I often get more friendly back. Like, it kind of makes sense, but it's hard when you're in it. And so I just hope that, like, thinking about what are you paying attention to in the context of a relationship, whether it's a patient relationship, a collegial relationship, a friends and family, like whatever relationship, what are you paying attention to in there? And do you like the return on investment? Are you spending a ton of time really just like so mad at them for being someone other than who they are? And is that producing results that you like, right? So that's sort of like the relationship part. The third domain that I wanted to talk about was inboxes. Like I said up front, that like initial Ezra Klein podcast was a kind of about inboxes. And so one thing from those studies that we know is that, like, you know, limiting how much of your attention budget you're spending on inboxes could be a wise suggestion. I think a lot of us, every time my husband's phone beeps because he has his work email with like the the sound notification goes up every time he has an email. And this is not me. Like, I accept and love him for who he is, but I know it's not for me. He's on his journey with his brain and he knows what works for him. But for me, I have like none of my notifications on. My phone's always on do not disturb pretty much. And email, absolutely not. Like, I don't even have the badge thing up. Like, I get to decide when I go into my email and open the portal. And it's like social media in that, like, there's multiple teleports that could come. Like, I open one email and someone's mad at me, and now I'm teleported into this interaction. The next email, someone's happy with me. Then the next three are junk mail, whatever. But like, it's a similar quality, honestly, to social media, other than there's more direct invitations for your interaction and your labor. And so if anything, being even more sort of judicious about how much time and attention you're spending in those spaces is wise. My EMR inbox, like when I am at clinic, is the only time I open my EMR inbox. And I really try and focus it to 2 to 3 times a day, especially at first when I was like, I hadn't really undone as many inhuman stories within the inbox. It was like 2 times a day, see how much you can get done, just like blast through it, you know? And I've done a lot to offload. Like, I have a wonderful nurse practitioner who you've met who goes through my inbox on my days off. You don't have to do this, but it is useful to have someone to share the inbox load with, is one of a strategy you could use. But even if you're doing it on your own, are you checking it between every patient? Are you checking it constantly? Or is it like, are you checking on your phone even? Are you checking in the middle of the night, right? Like, and none of these are right or wrong or good or bad, but notice the return on investment. Are you even that effective at getting through the inbox at certain times? Or are you like doing the inbox tango where you're going in, you're looking at 3 messages, you're teleported into those 3 patient stories, but you're overwhelmed because actually you only had a minute. And so now the whiteboard of your brain is stuck to those as you're going on in the rest of your day. And you didn't even really clear that much, right? Like, how can you make the time you're in the inbox intentional and thorough, and then you get out? And if you don't get through it all, that's okay. Like, we only have so much attention to pay before our attention starts to erode and our energy starts to erode. And we have only so much capacity per day to do this teleportation thing, you know? The other quality that really helps me is if I think about each inbox kind of in that way, it's like that teleporting into someone's world, to make them more enjoyable and less like clicky, clicky, typey, typey, feel like an automaton. Like, oh, I open this email. I imagine that person. I imagine being in conversation with that person. I reply back and then I close. You know, like when I'm in that sort of paced one human at a time, one teleport at a time space, I am much more effective at doing this in my EMR inbox and like really picturing each patient. Because before I would just like ignore, procrastinate, dread the inbox. Because I'm like, this isn't as good as talking to them in person. So I would start to bring up like, oh yes, Susie, I haven't seen her in forever. I'm picturing her. And yes, this is just a boring prescription renewal, but like, how could this help her? And kind of like valuing it, that really shifted overall, like that I don't think I've ever looked forward to doing EMR stuff, but like a little bit more sense of satisfaction and valuing for myself, the fact that this was having an impact for someone else really did help. Like, so even focusing and paying attention to the story I'm telling myself about the inbox and the tasks I'm doing in there versus like, this is a waste of time. I'm not even being paid for this. Is that helpful when we're doing it? I'm not sure. So it's like, how am I being paid for doing this? And if I really am like, I only want to do work I'm being paid for, like maybe stop. I know that might have consequences, but like really looking through and like thinking through the story that you're paying attention to as you're in the inbox. And then also how much time you want to spend in the inbox. There's the two levels of it in which the attention budget can really help, right? So what is it that you want to grow around your relationship with your various inboxes? For me, the email one, I know I still do the like market on read it, then market on read dance. And I'm still in a process of like just being kind to myself about the reasons I feel compelled to do that and not beating myself up and over time slowly undoing that. I have for times even deleted my email app from my phone. And there's reasons that that gets tricky that I'm not going to get into. It's way too boring. But like, and there's been times where it's like, I'm just taking a full break from that and just like seeing how that feels, right? So something to play with, like how much time, how much attention do you want to spend on your inbox? And when you're in your inboxes, the various ones you have, what do you want to pay attention to within those inboxes? What are the post-it notes, the inhuman stories that make them feel like less of a return on investment? And how can you be peeling those away? Right. And by the way, all of this like undoing inhuman story work is like fully what I do in my coaching work. And so if you're like, I want someone's help, it's hard for me to see outside of my own stories. That's normal. That means you're human. I didn't do it on my own. And so, you know, reach out if you were interested in seeing what resources coaching wise or what program I got going on. And we can talk, or like I can refer you to another coach or whatever, but like I would suggest that this work works better if you do it with other people. So I said, I shout out to that. Definitely the Creating Space program that's about to start. Like a big piece of creating space in your life is creating space in your brain. Like before you start deleting commitments from your calendar, it really helps to first create space in your mind and in your attention by doing this exact work. Like this is some of the early work we're going to do in that program. And I'm super excited about it. So the last place that I want to talk about that again is like an ongoing practice and that I want to be even more intentional about even over the next year. It's like one of my focuses is like, you know, when I am paying attention to the healthcare system and society as a whole, what am I paying attention to? You know, because the default is to pay attention to everything that is wrong and bad and broken. And that's not terrible. I think that makes sense, you know, and is a useful piece of it. And I've noticed that certainly then we can get into patterns of like, see how this part's difficult, see how this part's difficult. And especially if there's a story attached to it of like, and that means we're all doomed. It means that everything will be terrible forever. That is not return on investment that I'm interested in my life. Despair? No, thank you. That is not return on investment. Certain kinds of despair, sure. Like despair that the healthcare system is going to change for me. Yes. So then that means it's up to me to shift my own experience by deciding what I pay attention to. But then also, so like when I see something is broken, when I see that something is insufficient, I want to at least create equal attention and focus on what is coming through the crack in the system. You know, like Leonard Cohen, like there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. I can focus on the crack exclusively, or I could at least also focus on the light. And you've heard me use this analogy before of like, I picture our healthcare system built so long ago on principles, many of which are inhuman and insufficient, and just like many of them no longer serving us in our modern times as like kind of dusty concrete, but through it, as each of us, you know, finds our humanity and blossoms, like it's like plants growing through the cracks. And so I want to make sure I'm at least paying equal, if not more, attention to what's blooming through the cracks and emerging through, and perpetuating those stories and narratives too, and sharing them and making those go viral, if you will, amongst ourselves. Like, not in a toxic positivity way, but in a like, this is also happening way. And it shifts my experience of it. Cause like when I just think everything's burning all the time, why would I want to go to work? Why would I want to make anything better? I'm just like, you know, sort of shielding myself and running out. And that's fine if that's where you're at. And if that protects your peace, that's beautiful. But for me, I'm at a spot where it's like, I have capacity to dream what a more human version of healthcare could look like and embody that for myself. And one of the ways I get inspiration for how to embody it myself is by paying attention to other people who are doing it. In a recent conversation that I think is going to come out, like a recorded podcast conversation, someone was sharing their approach to a project they're doing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm noticing how that is embodying like a more human way to do it. And like, that was so exciting to just even like witness real time, like, oh, this is an example of how we can shift our approach to things, and that changes things. I want to look for those examples to give myself a feeling of being less alone, having more hope. Like, those are helpful, important concepts, but that are like really rooted in reality and are inspiring for me to then like offer those examples back, you know? So that's another way, like when I look at the healthcare landscape alone, you know, I'm not really diving into the Facebook groups of all of the grumbling. Sometimes I'm going in, and I don't say grumbling, that sounds kind of minimizing, and I don't mean it that way. I like the venting, the expressing of painful emotion, that's important. And like, when I look at that, that can be inspiration for me to be the change I want to see. And if I get too caught up in doing only that all the time and don't really, and are not thoughtful about the paired narrative I have about my role in it. So now I can look at when people still, I have friends, we share like absurd examples of like, oh my gosh, look at how bureaucracy made this 50 times harder. Look at how this is absolutely absurd. And now I have my attention on like, this is why I'm not waiting for the healthcare system to change before I change. And also like, if they get to be absurd, I get to be absurd. If their rules make no sense, I'm not going to live in fear of breaking them. I'm going to choose to follow the versions of rules, the versions of guidelines, regulations, recommendations, professional policies that actually make sense to me. And the rest, I can just laugh at it, but their absurdity, and be like, no, you know? So it sort of ends up being a bit of a healthcare rebel, as you heard recently, like a disruptive force of like, yeah, that's why this needs to change. And then it can give me energy. Speaking of return of investment, it gives me energy to really embody a disruptive, more human version of healthcare myself. So then it becomes fuel, right? So bottom line, have I said it enough in this podcast? What are you paying attention to? And like really paying your limited attention per day or limited mental energy per day to each day, and you're going to pay attention to something. What is the defaults that you notice with non-judgment, fear, like pure curiosity and compassion for yourself as you like do an attention, if you do an attention audit for yourself for a week and you're like, wow, I'm realizing I spent the vast majority of time focused on how people hate me or are probably judging me, and like, oh my gosh, that's my default for sure. I've noticed, and it continues to be there. And with love for ourselves, saying that is a story I don't want to continue, that disconnects me from people, that makes me in fear of people, that makes me feel alone. I don't like those returns on my investment. So then how can I start to get support and help to shift those stories so that time and attention is liberated for me? And then what do I want to pay attention to instead? Because those things go hand in hand. As you intentionally pay attention to other things, those old stories hold less power. But especially some deep-seated, sort of painful, maybe trauma-based stories, they may also need some like healing for your body to know why you no longer need those inhuman stories in order. Like, you don't need to pay attention. There's actually no tigers in the room when the colleague gives you the side eye, that is not a tiger. You are safe. You're powerful. You're okay on your own. Like, it's sort of a two-pronged thing. Releasing the very sticky stories that you notice default get your attention, that's its own work. And then also really intentionally refocusing on things that are generative, that are nourishing for you, that's the other piece. They go hand in hand in sort of a pendulation fashion. So I wanted to share, again, Adrienne Marie Brown. I just love that quote, what you pay attention to grows. I think it's a very helpful quote for me. And so I'm sharing it with you. And I was, then I went on a little Google search of like, you know, articles she's written about this topic. And I found this one. It's from, I think it was like from 2017 or 2018. I'm slightly abridging it just because I'm, you know, it'll take some time to read aloud. And some of it is more relevant to that time and talks about specific like news issues. But I more wanted to share with you like the way that she was thinking about it at that time. And just again, as more inspiration to consider doing a kind of attention audit in your own life and noticing what you pay attention to and notice what that means in terms of what is growing in your life and what is not. So here is the article. So it was titled Attention Liberation, Attention Reparations. And as a reminder, Adrienne Marie Brown is American, lives in the States. And is biracial, like black and white. And so just to give context for reparations, that's the context that she's living in. Not her full context at all, one very small piece of her context. So the first thing she says is, attention is one of our most valuable resources. In your own life, attention is what determines the quality of your lived experience. If your attention stays on what's wrong, on your powerlessness and pain, you can become identified with a victimized power under narrative, and that will grow. If your attention is instead on gratitude, collective power, experimentation, curiosity, and celebration, these things will grow in your life. Brené Brown and Oprah and Ava and all the manifestors know this. Love this. To be able to pick your attention up from the mainstream of crisis and commercials and other competitions for your money, and to put your attention where you want and need it, is something I'm starting to think of as attention liberation. It's clearer than ever that there are many forces who benefit from keeping our attention on a reactive string, puppeting us through fairly predictable responses that usually don't change underlying conditions or power dynamics. We listen to stories that leave us feeling furious and helpless, and we get engaged in our prescribed response. Lately, it's usually a hashtag post about how messed up the story is from every possible angle, until the next time our attention is directed to the next scandal or controversy. But we can train our attention, train ourselves to pick our attention up and place it where we want it, where we need it to be. I do this with meditation, learned from various teachers and through generative somatics. I meditate by focusing on my breath for 10 to 30 minutes daily. When I forget to practice, I quickly become reactive. I start to scroll the news obsessively, feeling my powerlessness and hypocrisy more than anything else. When I meditate daily, when I intentionally liberate my attention, I find I have enough focus to make healthier life choices, feel my agency, and do work that has a longer, deeper arc of transformation. I don't want to spend my life reacting to other people's cycles, their mistakes, lies, or ignorant projections, or the domination cycles of those who measure their humanity in false supremacy. Those things will continue, but what we pay attention to grows. So I pay attention to the places we as a species are learning, changing, getting free, experiencing pleasure and joy. My life feels so different when I liberate my attention that it almost feels like the universe is gifting me attention reparations. Instead of being frozen by hopelessness and fear for my species, which is often my reaction to the news, I experience a lot of days where I'm full of awe, laughter, work that includes pride, noticing the small and massive miracles that are a part of each day. It's taken a long time to train my attention even a little bit, and I'm sure still super beginner level with it. But the results in my daily life are already so powerful. I feel somewhere between productive and prolific on the days I wake up and set my mind on freedom. I want to see people with a transformational worldview be as productive and prolific as possible. It's a ways off yet, but I imagine it all the time, that we burst the shell of the old world with our vibrant, biodiverse, generative resistance in the form of willful, manifested ideological evolutions. Let us put our attention on a revolution for our species and grow it until we earn the miracle. Mic drop, end quote. I think that illustrates why I pay attention to Adrienne Rhee Brown. She's someone I follow on Instagram, and it's so interesting. She uses that space rarely to like speak her message, and more often to just she mostly uses her Instagram feed to collect delightful, hilarious memes of different things and clips around the internet that are joyful or absurd, and it's always a lovely space to be in, honestly. And there's things that she said in there, like, it makes sense. So if you, you know, if you enjoy like meditation, like sitting down and doing meditation, absolutely, I've seen like that's a way you can train your mind, and that's something I've played with on and off and have not yet found a form of it that is generative in a way that I want to continue doing it. That doesn't make it good or bad, though. I just don't feel bad if you don't meditate. I don't meditate, but also feel whatever you want to feel about meditation. If you enjoy it, keep rocking, you know? So it's all good. The generative somatics piece, like, I don't know, she didn't get into details about her experience with generative somatics. And I know there's a specific thing called that that I'm not trained in or aware of, but in general, somatics as in like embodiment, as in time I'm spending rooted in paying attention to my own body and in conversation with my body and her lived experience. That is always something that pays dividends to me, both like, therefore it makes me more likely to enjoy and want to move my body on a daily basis that I notice overall helps my body feel better. You know, it changes the kinds of food I want to put in my body, not in a way where it's diety or like healthy or unhealthy, but I just have noticed as I paid more attention to my body that certain amounts of certain foods or just even certain foods at all, my body is saying, no, thank you. One of them's dairy, which is a real bummer, but kind of makes sense. It's a family trait. Anyway, that's an aside, but like just in general, like just paying attention to my own body has paid a ton of dividends in all the settings I've even just talked about. Pay attention to my own body in my inbox with patients on social media. That's really actually when I pay attention to my own body, that's what gives me the information about the dividends it's paying, right? That's the impact where I'm going to feel my impact of paying attention to all these spaces and notice the return of events on investment. That is felt by my body. And so if nothing else, paying attention to your own body is worthwhile and as much as possible in those spaces, right? So that's it for me. Thank you so much for offering me your attention. Whether it was full and you sat there and only listened or watched me for an entire 55 minutes, or if you were doing something else, that is like, I don't just sit and listen to a podcast without doing other things. You can do two things at once in that way, in my experience. So thank you for offering some of your attention, as well as, you know, laundry or walking or driving or whatever it is that you do when you listen to me. And yeah, my invitation to you is, what are you spending your attention budget on? Is it time to do an attention audit and notice not only what you're paying attention to, but what it's bringing back into your life? And do you like what you find? If you happen to listen to this in the month of September 2024, Creating Space is about to start. And as of this time of recording, I'm in conversation with a few people to fill up the few of the spots, but there should be at least one spot left. So if you've been like, I'm on the fence, like, and if you want to do some of this work, Creating Space is a great place to do it with other people. It's a way to focus your attention, is like blocking out time in your schedule, blocking out a path and being supported by other humans doing the same work to help draw your attention away from all of these forces that want you to be paying attention to them. So that's one method you could use if you like. And no matter what, thank you again for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. I would love to take this work deeper with you. visit joanchanmd.com today and discover my growing menu of options for restorative medical education to suit your learning needs. I offer one-on-one coaching, customized workshops, and self-study courses that allow you to connect not only with my work on a deeper level, but also with other healthcare humans just like you. So if you want to start humanizing your work in healthcare to a deeper level and do it in community with others, please visit joanchanmd.com and find those options and what fits you and your life today.